Self-centered materialistic ego, thus being transformed into three features, becomes known as the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions, namely the powers that evolve matter, knowledge of material creations, and the intelligence that guides such materialistic activities. Narada, you are quite confident to understand this.
Purport. Materialistic ego, or the sense identification with matter, is grossly self-centered, devoid of clear knowledge of the existence of God. And this self-centered egoism is the of the materialistic living entities is the cause of their being conditioned by the other paraphernalia, and continuing their bondage of material existence. In the Bhagavad Gita, this self-centered egoism is very nicely explained in the 7th chapter, verses 24 through 27. The self-centered impersonalist, without a clear conception of the personality of Godhead, concludes in his own way that the personality of Godhead takes a material shape from his original impersonal spiritual existence for a particular mission. And this misleading conception of the Supreme Lord by the self-centered impersonalist continues even though he is seen to be very interested in the Vedic literatures, such as the Brahma Sutras and other highly intellectual sources of knowledge. This ignorance of the personal feature of the Lord is due simply to ignorance of the mixture of different modes. The impersonalist, thus, cannot conceive of the Lord's eternal spiritual form of eternal knowledge, bliss, and existence. The reason is that the Lord reserves the right of not exposing himself to the non-devotee who, even after a thorough study of literature like the Bhagavad Gita, remains an impersonalist simply by obstinacy. This obstinacy is due to the action of yoga maya, a personal energy of the Lord that acts like an aide-de-camp by covering the vision of the obstinate impersonalist. Such a bewildered human being is described as mudha, or grossly ignorant, because he is unable to understand the transcendental form of the Lord as being unborn and unchangeable. If the Lord takes a form or material shape from his original and personal feature, then it means that he is born and changeable from impersonal to personal. But he is not changeable, nor does he ever take a new birth like a conditioned soul. The conditioned soul may take a form birth after birth due to his conditional existence in matter, but the self-centered impersonalist, by their gross ignorance, accept the Lord as one of them because of self-centered egoism, even after so-called advancement of knowledge of the Vedanta. The Lord, being situated in the heart of every individual living entity, knows very well the tendency of such conditioned souls in terms of past, present, and future. But the bewildered conditioned soul hardly can know him in his eternal form. By the will of the Lord, therefore, the impersonalist, even after knowing the Brahman and Paramatma features of the Lord, remains ignorant of his eternal personal feature as ever-existent Narayan, transcendental to all material creation. The cause of such gross ignorance is constant engagement by the materialistic man in the matter of artificially increasing material demands. To realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to purify the materialistic senses by devotional service. The mode of goodness, or the Brahminical culture recommended in the Vedic literatures, is helpful to such spiritual realization, and thus the Jnana Shakti stage of the conditioned soul is comparatively better than the other two stages, namely Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti. The whole material civilization is manifested by a huge accumulation of materials, or in other words, raw materials for industrial purposes, and the industrial enterprises, Kriya Shakti, are all due to gross ignorance of spiritual life. In order to rectify this great anomaly of materialistic civilization based on the principles of Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti, one has to adopt the process of devotional service to the Lord by adoption of the principles of Karma Yoga mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 9.27 as follows. Yat karoshi yat asnasi yat johosi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kuntaya tat kurusva marapanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer, all you give away, as well as all the studies that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. So I'll just read the verse again. So, hamkara iti prakto vikurvan samabhutrida. Vaikarikas tejasascha tamasaschetti yadvida dravya shakti kriya shakti jnana shakti iti prabhu. The self-centered materialistic ego, thus being transformed into three features, becomes known as the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions, namely the powers that evolve matter, knowledge of material creations, and the intelligence that guides such materialistic activities. Narada, you are quite confident to understand this. So, here, section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's some technical descriptions and very exact descriptions of creation. This scientific knowledge you won't find, although there is descriptions of creation Bible and the Quran, just a few sentences, very very just enough to understand that the Lord is responsible for creation. But if you actually want the technical information, it's only found in literatures such as the Bhagavatam. So a little bit of technical information, we'll try and go through that. I want to make sure you're sitting up straight and alert. Don't, if you miss one step, it makes it hard to follow the steps that come after that, so don't space out. Just to put this verse into context, here, Brahma is answering Narada Muni's questions about the cause of creation. And Brahma begins to answer Narada by first describing that everything is but the energy of God. is dependent upon him. So this is the, you know, the first understanding. And therefore, answering Narada's, you know, very, he asked about 10 questions. What is the shelter of the universe? Is Narayan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, Brahma says, because it is known that he created, that I am creating what is actually already created by Narayan, by the Lord, and I am also created by him. So then the explanation is, so what is that process of creation by the Lord? That because we know that the material creation consists of three modes of material nature. Does that mean that the Lord, who is the origin or the cause of material creation, must also consist of three modes of material nature? So Brahma describes that, no, the Lord's energy accepts three modes. Not the Lord himself, but his energy, known as Maya, accepts three modes of material nature. But he himself is completely pure and transcendental from the, in other words, Maya, consisting of the three modes, and the Lord, they are different. They are not one and the same. At the same time, the Maya is the energy of the Lord. So, whereas it is also described that the Jiva, however, is different from the material energy and from the Lord, in that the Jiva does become bewildered by contact with the material energy. The material energy has a bewildering potency because it can cover the knowledge of the Jiva. So the Jiva, the spirit soul, has an eternal spiritual form of Satchidananda. But he forgets that. The covering of Maya makes him forget that, because instead of identifying himself with his eternal spiritual form, it is covered by the material energy, and he identifies himself with the covering. So the Jiva is different from the Lord, who is it is his, he is the controller of this material energy, and the Lord is the controller of material energy, which accepts three modes, but the Jiva is prone to be covered by that. So these things are discussed by Brahma, just as so in verse 19 it describes that the three modes of material nature, so the Lord's energy accepts three modes of material nature, and those three modes of material nature manifest as matter, knowledge, and activities or conditioned activities. And those three features which become manifested by the material energy, by Maya, place the conditioned living entity under cause and effect, under bondage. So so the material energy is therefore the cause of matter, knowledge, and various activities. So that those causes, that, you know, just a little technical information. Karya, when the gunas are indicating the cause of the material elements, the Karya, of course, and Karana, the cause of the material activities, and Kartritve, the cause of that knowledge guiding principle. So, but those manifestations, then it describes the, the steps in how they, those three aspects of material energy become manifest. And when they manifest, the understanding is that, those three manifestations have the ability to put the living entity under the under cause and effect. So, in verse 20, it describes that... Just reiterating, of course, that the Lord, when the jivas become under this material energy and bewildered and under the influence of cause and effect, that that means that they can they're not able to perceive the Lord. Not only can they not perceive their own nature, but they can't perceive the nature of the Supreme Lord. As we see in this purport that Srila Prabhupada has given, even up to the impersonalists who study the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedanta and so many things, they're still under the influence of this, material energy where it covers their ability to perceive their own Sarup and what to speak of the Lord's nature. So, it puts them under cause and effect, and it covers their ability to perceive themselves and the Lord properly. So then, the question then is, so the Lord's material energy accepts three modes and produces these three different manifestations. So how is that done? So in verse 21 it describes that through his energy of time, which is an energy situated within the Lord himself, and also through the energies of karma and svabhava, or the destiny of the living entity and the nature within the living entity, energies coming from the jiva himself, the material energy is agitated into action. In other words, the material energy does not spontaneously manifest those three aspects of matter, activities and knowledge, controlling knowledge. The material energy must be agitated into action. These factors are very important because as one understands the nature of how the material creation must have come into being, it means that you also understand that there must be a Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, here they're describing creation, Brahma's describing creation very carefully, so that if you understand creation, you'll also understand, well, there must be a Supreme Personality of Godhead. yet the impersonalist, as Prabhupada described, describes that one who comes to the material world, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, that we come to this material world because of this tendency born in, due to desire and hatred or envy, that we desire, that we see Krishna's activities and we think, I want to be him. You know, I want to be God. That is that desire. I don't want him to be God. I want me to be God. That's the envy. So that motivation means that even the impersonalists who study the Vedanta and the Vedic scriptures, if they're still affected by that desire and envy of the Supreme Lord, their motive in studying those scriptures is still to forget God and to, you know, place themselves in his position. So therefore that tendency has to be purified, and then taking the same information purified of that tendency, one can perceive, you know, I don't want there to be God. But if you actually look at the process of creation practically, you'll see there must be God. Like that. So you know, an important factor here, of course, is that the material energy is inert matter. It must be activated by, you know, an active, potent energy force, that is described that, and then in the 22nd verse, you know, so after describing that material energy is not acting in a spontaneous way, but is being, you know, activated by the Lord's glands in the form of time, which in the Brahma Samhita, in the commentaries, it describes that that time force of the Lord is a combination of the jnana and kriya shaktis. So, and then apart from time, there is also the karma and svabhava, or the destiny and the nature, that energy of, which is coming from the living entities who are also injected into the material world. Those energies are activating the material energy. In the first place, as described in verse 22, the time element is agitating the modes into action initially. Because in the beginning, it is called pradana, the material energy, and the modes of material nature, although present in a neutral state, but then they become agitated. From that, the Mahatattva becomes manifested. That Mahatattva in the beginning is has a predominance of sattva, sattva guna. And but then, you know, with an increase in the mode of the predominance of passion, that Mahatattva is sometimes called the Sutratattva. The mode of passion is important because, you know, it is synonymous with activity and creation. So because Mahatattva is the, you know, birthplace of all creations, then the mode of passion becomes prominent. So when the mode of tamas becomes more prominent, most prominent, so the other two gunas are also there, that Mahatattva is known as ahankara or false ego. And then as described here in this verse, that Mahatattva ego has three divisions. And those divisions are three divisions: materialistic ego in goodness, passion, and ignorance. In three divisions, the powers that evolve matter, the knowledge of material creations, and the intelligence that guides such materialistic activities, as mentioned here. So those three aspects of Mahatattva, when it is predominated by Tamaguna, therefore Mahatattva is known as Ahankara, or false ego, then those three different manifestations become prominent. So the and they are now here. The translation mentions Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti, and Dravya Shakti. So, false ego in the mode of goodness, which is being empowered by the Jnana Shakti. It manifests as the Adidevam principle, or knowledge personified by the devatas, and the ahankara in the mode of rajas, empowered by the kriya shakti, manifests as the ajatma, the various senses and materialistic intelligence, you know, for activity. And the material energy in the mode of tamas, empowered by the dravya shakti, Maya's potency to produce the material ingredients, produces the material elements, you know, the five. So these are three different manifestations of the ahankara. Prabhupada mentions these terms in different ways to help us to understand, because it's a little technical. Sometimes he describes the adidevam as the supplier. Material energy has a feature that there is a supplier in the form of the demigods, maintaining. It's a controlling system. Everything is being controlled. Control means knowledge. There is those who have the knowledge of how to control things in such a way that there is a proper supply of everything required. That takes knowledge, what needs to be supplied and how to supply it. The material energy, so there is a controlling system, there is also those who are controlled through their senses, by literally acquiring various senses, material senses. They are controlled, they can initiate certain activities, but limited and conditioned and controlled by the senses that they're awarded. And being controlled like that, they try to, according to their capacity, they try to enjoy the raw materials or gross matter which has been supplied. The gross matter, of course, the objects of the senses, and of course the material body itself, all of these things consist of the matter or the material energy, and therefore, in effect, one experiences temporary, you know, matter is temporary, therefore there is birth, death, old age and disease. You know, these are technical terms, but these are the, you know, just simple terms. So Prabhupada sort of sums that up in this purport in this way. He describes that. He says, now the cause of such gross ignorance is constant engagement by the materialistic man in the matter of artificially increasing material demands. To realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to purify the materialistic senses by devotional service. The mode of goodness, or the Brahminical culture recommended in the Vedic literatures, is helpful to such spiritual realization, and thus the Jnana Shakti stage of the conditioned soul is comparatively better than the other two stages, namely the Dravya Shakti and the Kriya Shakti. So here, you know, how nicely Prabhupada summarizes a lot of technical information in a way that we can just immediately, you know, understand how it's actually playing out in life. This is the whole material civilization is manifested by a huge accumulation of materials, or in other words, raw materials for industrial purposes. And the industrial enterprises, Kriya Shakti, are all due to gross ignorance of spiritual life. In order to rectify this great anomaly of materialistic civilization based on the principles of Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti, one has to adopt the process of devotional service. So, you know, Prabhupada sums up, one may think, you know, what does Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti and Jnana Shakti got to do with me? But actually, you know, the conditioned soul, especially in human society where one is supposed to understand these things, but the human beings are currently absorbed in the material energy's features as Dravya Shakti. They're absorbed in trying to acquire the raw materials of matter to enjoy, and they want to enjoy them with their senses. So, you know, there is so much activity, you know, in relationship to, you know, manifesting these raw materials in a way that is, you know, conducive to sense gratification, commonly known as industry and technology. So for us, you know, industry and technology is, you know, absorption in Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti. But Prabhupada says that this Jnana Shakti stage is comparatively better. You know, that Jnana Shakti is coming to the understanding of, you know, the very mechanics of the material energy properly. And so therefore we see that the demigods gaining that understanding to some degree. And of course devotees, you know, beginning from brahmanas, which is the threshold of devotional life, they gain this knowledge of how the material energy actually works. And therefore they have a greater degree of control over, you know, their material existence. So the senses, in the Bhagavad Gita, in remember the verse. It's in the 9th chapter. Someone might be able to help me out here. But it is described that when the living entity, material nature is the cause of the various material manifestations, but the living entity is the cause of his own suffering and enjoyment. What is that? What is that number? Where are our scholars? No, I think it's. Is it? Yeah, could be. The material manifestation is the cause of the material energy is the cause of the various material manifestations, but the living entity himself is the cause of his, you know, own happiness and distress.
The nature is said to be the cause of material causes.
Yeah.
Whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world.
What verse is that?
1321.
Now in that purport, so the living entity, the material energy is creating so many different material bodies. The living entity, according to their desire to enjoy in a particular way, is awarded a particular body. And once you're in that body, you have to suffer or so-called enjoy the consequences. So he mentions that one may take the body of a dog. Now, once the living entity is in the body of a dog, he must act like a dog. And therefore, whatever suffering, basically, is due in a dog's body, one must accept that. So the living entity could choose, as Prabhupada says in that purport, he can choose to just, you know, attain again his original spiritual form and enjoy eternally. But he may choose, you know, let me be in the material world and I want to enjoy in a particular way with, you know, certain types of sense objects, either in tamas, rajas or sattva. So the Lord knows, well, you know, because of the tamas there and the particular, you know, senses that you really want to enjoy, you know, a body of a dog is very good for you. But once in that body, one is forced to act like a dog. Therefore, we see that even Indra, you know, when he was cursed, he took the form of a pig and he acted like a pig. He didn't act like Indra in a pig's body. He acted just like a pig. And, you know, he was forced. Prabhupada mentions also that, for instance, if someone is an American, if they have an American body, wherever they, even if they go to a different country, they still enjoy like an American. You know, there's sort of a certain standard of opulence that they have. Even if they go to a poor country, they're still enjoying like an American. He says that Indian people, even if they leave India to enjoy like an American, they can't help but search out some spiritual happiness. And you know, so this is how the demigods control that according to one's desire, according to one's karma, you know, there is a cause and effect. The demigods will allocate a certain amount of happiness, a certain type of happiness, and a certain amount of distress. How do they do that? They award a particular body. And once in that body, it's set. Like that. No turning back. Prabhupada gives another example that if you buy a third class ticket, you know, to travel, then you can't expect to enjoy the first class facilities. You know, you've only purchased third class. You don't have the purchasing power, you don't have the ticket. The material body means that according to your karma, your desire, your destiny, you know, you have the purchasing power to enjoy to a certain degree and, you know, to suffer to a certain degree, and you can't change that. This is the controlling factor of the material energy, which is allocated through the various demigods, such as Yamaraj. You know, Yamaraj has full knowledge that according to these activities you should take birth in such and such a body, and then the various demigods arrange that. And the living entities are awarded various types of material body senses, and in this way they're controlled in how much happiness and distress according to the laws of cause and effect. And in those material bodies they try and enjoy matter, the objects of the senses, which are produced by the material energy. So this is the cycle. Understanding, so matter has produced this whole setup. It is a, and if one looks at that setup, you know, one should understand that who has set this up. This is a very nice system, you know. So who has set that up? It has, you know, how can material energy set up such a, you know, a well-designed system for the living entities? There must be a supreme there must be a supreme intelligence, a supreme personality of Godhead who manipulates the material energy into such a well-designed, functioning, you know, machine, you know, in this way. You know, that supreme intelligent being, supreme controller, not only has the intelligence and the potency to do that, must do that because the material energy, you know, is inert. Material energy is unconscious and inert matter. It cannot organize itself, just like if you have a stack of bricks. You know, you can't expect that the stack of bricks will turn itself into a factory. You know, they can't move. A living entity with some energy, some force, living force, has to come along and, you know, manipulate those bricks into, you know, some design. And then if that living entity has intelligence, it will be a well-functioning, you know, factory that does things. So, in this way, Brahma is pointing out not just the process of material creation, but if you look at the material creation that's created, this cycle of, you know, production of what is enjoyed for each and every species of life. Everything is produced, material energy produces what is required, the raw materials for enjoyment of the objects of the senses for every species of life. The material energy produces unlimited variety of living entities, different senses. No one else can explain why so many species of life. You know, why doesn't matter just produce one type? One sort of thing comes out of the material energy. Why so many varieties? Because there are so many different desires, so many different destinies, for the living entities. The material energy is, metering out, the destiny precisely to each living entity. So how does matter, inert matter, which is unconscious, how can it provide these things and provide the, various types of bodies and meter out their exact deserve according to their desires, So not only is the process of creation being expertly described by the Bhagavatam, but it's described in such a way that you must come to the ultimate conclusion that there must be a Supreme Personality of Godhead who is, empowering the inert material energy and who is, the intelligence behind, such a wonderful design of that. The Prabhupada mentions that the Jnana Shakti mode of life, where instead of just being absorbed in the material senses awarded by the material energy, and trying to enjoy the raw material supply, the sense objects of the senses, one should understand the situation one is in. That is the Jnana Shakti stage, coming to the Brahminical stage or Brahminical culture, the Vedic civilization. Understanding one's position within this cycle, then one may understand how to, you know, become, how the living entity can become, you know, disentangled. Because the living entity is unchanging, accepting one body after another. That means there is an unchanging conscious being different from the material energy, and that unchanging spirit soul should reside in the spiritual world. If one comes to the proper understanding, still, one may, if one is not purified of this, as Prabhupada says here in his opening statement, materialistic ego or the sense identification with matter is grossly self-centered, devoid of clear knowledge of the existence of God. Later in the second purport, he says, the cause of such gross ignorance is constant engagement by the materialistic man in the matter of artificially increasing material demands. After millions and millions and millions of lifetimes of this self-centered materialistic ego identifying with the material senses as the enjoyer of matter and the controller of matter, in other words, thinking we are God, thinking we are Krishna, then one comes to study the Vedas, but the same self-centered materialistic ego is there. We're studying the Vedas with the, you know, conception that I am God. I, you know, somehow I've forgotten I'm God, or I've fallen from that position, but I can get back there, like that. And so, you know, that has to be purified. So even it's not just a matter of understanding the nature of how the material existence works, but one actually has to be purified of that, you know, materialistic ego as well. And that is done, as Prabhupada says, through devotional service. Therefore, even if one becomes a brahmana by the Jnana Shakti, you know, mode of life, one still has to associate with the Vaishnavas in order to purify oneself of that, you know, enjoying propensity of the material energy. Then, when one associates with the Vaishnavas and hears about the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that, you know, that materialistic ego, that I am God, becomes completely smashed to pieces, you know, that how can I compare myself to Krishna? You know, how can I, you know, when we look at it, you know, in... hear the descriptions of you know, Krishna, and then we compare that to ourselves. Well, God does this, they're saying Krishna is God, he does that. I can't do any of that, you know. So not only that, but we think, gee, he's a really lovable person, you know, that we become attracted. Actually, you know, Krishna is very attractive. The person we've been trying to forget, when we remember him, we think, you know, he's a really beautiful, wonderful person. So that, it's the devotional service, not just an understanding of creation. In fact, creation can only be properly understood through devotees. And when that process of creation is properly understood through the devotees, that purifies the heart of this tendency to see oneself as a controller and enjoy the material energy. And one sees oneself as a servant of God. And therefore, Prabhupada says in this verse that, you know, in order to rectify this great anomaly of materialistic civilization based on the principles of Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti, one has to adopt the process of devotional service of the Lord by adoption of the principles of Karma Yoga mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9.27. So we then, instead of trying to enjoy matter, everything that we're doing, we try to do as an offering to the Supreme Lord. Because we still want to enjoy matter to some degree, but we don't want to be bound by the reactions, and we're trying to approach and please the Supreme Lord, it's Karma Yoga. But gradually that Karma Yoga, in the association of devotees, becomes transformed into pure love of God. We're not performing making offerings to God just to be, you know, free from karma and bondage and be because it's the right thing to do. We're doing it because we want to, you know, just love God and be loved by God. So this is the process, and this is what the Krishna consciousness movement, of course, is doing. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, you know, he wanted that practically in every factory and office they have, you know, deities of the Lord. And, you know, as long as, of course, they're properly maintained, they shouldn't be, deities shouldn't be established or, you know, placed in, you know, homes. Prabhupada mentions even for his own devotees in 1972 in Los Angeles, he was saying, I noticed that, you know, devotees are, you know, wanting deities for their homes, they're ordering them from Vrindavan. He says, you know, this is okay if they're properly worshipped with the standards as they learn from the temples, you know. Then it's okay, but don't make a farce of it. So Prabhupada wanted, you know, even in the factories and offices, that there may be deities, but, you know, it should be overseen in such a way that they're worshipped nicely, not in a farcical way. So that people can learn this process of Karma Yoga, which gradually transforms into Bhakti Yoga. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Exactly. That's sort of the root of it, because you know, one is the enjoyer. Of course, we have the desire to enjoy in a self-centered way, and because we have that desire, we identify with the materially bodily designation that I am this body. Australian, Indian, man, woman, you know, animal, what have you. So we identify that because that bodily designation is fulfilling those desires. When we perform activities where instead of desiring to please the senses of the body, we're desiring to please the Lord's senses through service, then we become satisfied, or you know, we feel a spiritual satisfaction, a happiness, a transcendental happiness, which is not dependent upon, which has nothing to do with sense gratification, you know, the senses. And therefore, because that we're still desiring, but we're becoming happy by desiring for Krishna and to serve Krishna and his devotees rather than serving ourselves. So the happiness is actually there, you know, transcendental happiness. When that happiness is there, then the spirit soul thinks, well, why, you know, I don't need to be attached to this designation anymore, you know, of this material body. I was attached to this bodily designation because it was fulfilling these material desires. When the spirit soul sees, well, I'm feeling very blissful in Krishna consciousness, serving Krishna, I don't have to be attached to that. It's very easy to give up the bodily designations. So yes, that service attitude to Krishna and the transcendental, you know, happiness that comes from that actually purifies us of the upadis, or the designations and the material desires. Like Dhruva Maharaj, here Karma Yoga, and sort of, you know, a good example that is given of Karma Yoga is Dhruva Maharaj. In the beginning, he desired something and he approached the Lord for some, you know, material benefit. But his senses, his transcendental senses, became so satisfied, you know, in association with the Supreme Lord and you know, serving the Lord, that he no longer wanted that kingdom. Still, Krishna satisfied his desire anyway, knowing that, this is what Prabhupada says, that the business of satisfying our desires, we leave to Krishna. Our business is just to serve Krishna and not to try and satisfy. We may have different personal interests or material desires, and our business is not to try and satisfy those. We just try to satisfy Krishna. But Krishna may sometimes satisfy the desires that a devotee has, knowing that it's beneficial for the devotional service. It helps to give them faith and encouragement or what have you. And sometimes he might not satisfy their particular desires, because he knows that satisfying that will be a great impediment for them. Therefore, as the devotee goes on in devotional service, they're seeing that they're not just satisfied by serving Krishna, but they're also feeling very confident and protected how Krishna is looking after, managing their, maintaining their existence in this material world and also helping them progress back to the spiritual world. So they feel very, very satisfied and they're developing great faith and love for Krishna. So yeah, that service attitude is what a devotee develops. Yeah. And that service attitude to Krishna basically purifies everything. Well, it would depend upon their level of bhakti. Karma Yoga has in the Bhagavad Gita, when Prabhupada is saying Karma Yoga, he's talking about producing a predominance of bhakti. But there's some, there's a mixture of some material, personal interests. Where there's a predominance of bhakti, and that person is in the association of devotees, just those material taints, are gradually reduced like that. So, yeah. In ISKCON, devotees are only trained in bhakti yoga. They may have a propensity for karma yoga, or jnana yoga, or astanga yoga. They may have some tendencies, but they're trained in bhakti yoga. But as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, we don't, we have to be careful not to disturb the minds of people, that we're too radical in how we handle people. They may have some propensity for these things, which we're training them in bhakti yoga. But, they may be doing something with a little bit of a tinge of karma or jnana, what have you. And our business is to increase the bhakti till it's only bhakti. But where there's, some impurities, we just gradually, step by step, not that we just, all of a sudden, you approach someone on the street, yes, I'm interested in Krishna consciousness, all right, well then you have to give up everything everything you're doing like that, and you just have to, follow these four regular principles of chanting. It doesn't work like that. They'll go along with certain propensities for some time, but we're increasing, the bhakti. We're just training them in bhakti, but their propensities may be there to some degree. We have to, be a little bit gentle with them. Yeah. Any room for them?
Just a comment.
Yeah.
In response to his question, I think if we look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs and writings, and we can see that actually he was performing because of his
you know, he says, my house, my family, my, you know, everything belongs to you, Krishna, it's all yours.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just happened to be your the caretaker. So we can ascertain from his, you know, from his, from what he's saying and his mood, and that, that is an indication of his mood. And his mood was very much, you know, everything is yours and I'm doing it for your pleasure. So that's bhakti, basically.
Yeah. Pure
but in one sense, karma yoga is not, it doesn't have to be materially motivated.
Mm-hmm.
If you're active and performing devotional, if you're active in your daily duties and so forth, that doesn't mean that you're a karma yogi necessarily. Because
mm-hmm.
that's an element of bhakti also.
Yes, yeah. That's right, yeah. That's what I was saying, that, you know, there may be an element of karma yoga in practicing devotees in the very beginning, but, you know, they're basically on the path of pure devotional service. You know, they're not at that. It's, you know, there's some tinges, but basically they're being taught and they're practicing bhakti yoga from the very beginning. Therefore, we just say that they're, you know, devotees, bhaktis, at that. Even though these traces are there, you know, to some degree. If someone remains stuck on a platform, they're not advancing in bhakti, they're just really stuck on the platform of karma or jnana, then we call them by that's a karma yogi, that's a jnana yogi. They're stuck on a platform. But one who's progressive in bhakti, we call them bhakta, even though there's some tendency in the beginning. But, of course, as Anirudha Prabhu was saying, bhakti know the core, great acharyas like that, always performing bhakti. Yeah. And their activities in grihastha life are to give a good example for those who may be on the platform of karma yoga, etc., how to engage it. We can't chastise Bhakti Siddhanta. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Bhakti Siddhanta says when Thakur is elevated enough, he could have criticised his father.
That's right, yeah.
We probably shouldn't be thinking
about
that.
Any other comments or questions?
We pray to demigods for material benediction.
Yes. In the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, it mentions if you want a good wife, you worship this demigod. If you want a good husband, if you're interested in sex power, you worship Indra, you know, like that. But Prabhupada mentions in commenting on that section that in every ceremony where a demigod is worshipped, even Kali Puja, the Shalagram or the Narayan Shila or, you know, the Lord, Vishnu Tattva, is invoked because the demigods cannot award their benedictions to anyone without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this we see in this section here, that the, even though the demigods are part of the material setup as the Adidevam, still that whole material setup is being operated under the being energized, made potent by the energies of the Lord, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti, Dravya Shakti, under his supervision and guidance. That means that everything a demigod does or any activity that goes on in material energy is going on by the energy of the Lord, supervision and his guidance. So they cannot give benediction without the Lord's sanction. But the Lord may, you know, sanction, yes, they've worshipped you like this. Let them have faith in the Vedas. Let them have faith in the authority of the demigods, and gradually that faith leads to this. You know, he says they're worshiping the demigods, and then gradually they realize, but I worship the Lord, the Shalagram, or, you know, Vishnu Tattva deity in the Jagya to get the benediction. Why not go directly to the Lord? This comes after some lifetime, so it actually leads to Krishna consciousness. So therefore, Krishna, you know, the Lord may sanction, yes, award this, because it's leading to devotional service.
Even if they don't have the karma, the Lord might sanction it?
Yeah. So there's, it is going on, not just according to their karma, but also under the supervision of the Lord, who's ultimately trying to get all the living entities to have faith in Him. So He may sanction for that purpose if He feels it fulfills that, or He may deny it if He thinks it's averse to ultimately coming to Him. Hare Krishna.